Welcome to the Unmuted Podcast. I'm Jay Mariotti in Los Angeles, where a pandemic did not prevent the beauty and the joy of a Lakers championship from degenerating into an ugly scene in a tense city. The mayor, Eric Garcetti, had pleaded in vain for celebrating fans to stay away from Staples Center, and while some came with good intentions, that did not stop the inevitable hooligans, with large groups clashing with police and looting, one mob kicking a police car and another starting a fire in a city bus. Oh, and a man's hand was blown off by fireworks amid arrests for unlawful assembly. How sad that just a few feet away in the plaza by LA Live, thousands had paid tribute to Kobe Bryant after his January death, leaving flowers and portraits in an unforgettable mourning period. America, this is not how you react to a sports championship, an excuse to riot and loot. I am ashamed of the city in which I live.
This is the Pandemic Proof Podcast with Jay Mariotti, an actual journalist who covered the Bay Area earthquake long after a World Series was postponed and on 9/11 successfully demanded to keep hosting his national radio show when an advertising boss wanted to switch to network programming. Did you really think Jay ever would stick to sports during a global health crisis? Now, here's Jay Mariotti.
You are excused for oscillating between the primal urge to emit sudden noises, say a gasp when LeBron James wins for Kobe Bryant and angers our president, a howl when another Tampa Bay lab clone rocks Aroldis Chapman, a groan when Tom Brady wants a fifth down, and the unavoidable disgust that the NFL is treating players like medical rats. We have the good and the bad, the celebratory and the evil. Celebration, of course, is what sports does so well, whisking us from whatever is bothering us to crown champions, and pity also runs. But there remains a pandemic-era awkwardness of placing too much importance on winners and losers. Yes, LeBron has won the bubble, conquering the most arduous mental challenge ever faced by an all-time athlete, Michael Jordan included, with a Lakers team that wasn't all that great. In the process, he made President Trump seethe, lifting a trophy only days after he eviscerated James as a, quote, hater and a spokesman for the Democratic Party, a very nasty spokesman, end quote, President Trump. Here was LeBron, loving life again, after his latest and, dare I say, greatest championship, better even than winning for Cleveland.
We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
And yes, in baseball, the Rays have a chance. The Rays to wow America as low-revenue savants who might actually hit a historic trifecta that we all can love. Trolling the fallen, pinstriped behemoth Yankees with New York, New York lyrics, teaching those cheating Houston asterisks about ethics, then beating the blue blood Dodgers in the World Series. That is ahead of the Rays. That said, amid the cigars and the confetti and the restrained revelry, we should have guilty pangs. That's because the NFL doesn't give two snot swabs about the players' wellness and safety amid its COVID-19 crisis. Outbreaks be damned. This is not only my opinion, as stated often here. Now, the NFL players are echoing it. Here was the Patriots' Jason McCourty, who was leery of the NFL and also of his own players' union.
Because I think outside of here, the people that don't have to walk in our building, whether it's the league office, whether it's the NFLPA, they don't care. I mean, we're trying to get games played and we're trying to get the season going. So for them, it's not about what's in our best interest, or our health and safety. It's about, you know, what can we make protocol wise that sounds good, looks good, and how can we go out there and play games?
And yet, even as the NFL again closes facilities in Tennessee and New England, as new positive coronavirus results inevitably pop up, The same defiance prevails corporately. Games are coldly rescheduled. Protocols continue to be violated. The league and the networks remain fixated on Monday, and mindless masculinity continues to march on to the point in college football where a caveman head coach, Dan Mullen, wants Florida fans to ignore the infection rates and, quote, pack the swamp for LSU next week, end quote. What?
Crowd was certainly a factor in the game. I will certainly say that. I know our governor passed that rule, so certainly, hopefully, the university administration decides to let us pack the swamp.
You're saying 90? You want to see 90,000?
Absolutely, want to see 90,000 in the swamp, Lesher.
Jay-Z had 99 problems. Gainesville, Florida, was about to have 90,000 problems until the school athletic director thankfully said no to the crazy man Dan Mullen. The NFL has COVID problems 24/7, of course, with new cases in the Titans and Patriots camps requiring the league to move around these games like ant traps and making me ask once again, why even attempt this madness? Shut it down. It's stupefying enough that dozens of players have been self-isolating, facilities and practices are routinely shut down, and the league suddenly has no idea when or if a $17 billion season will be completed. It's an absolute mind blur when every new headline should be accompanied by a scorching Eddie Van Halen riff. But you know what's most troubling here? Only a month into what will be a long, excruciating slog, likely to include a week 18... tacked on, if not many more weeks? Nobody is telling us about the children, the wives, the significant others, the parents, the grandparents, the friends, the people out and about in the community, the potential collateral damage when NFL players, coaches, and team personnel don't take the virus seriously and act as super spreaders. We know that the Tennessee Titans have been egregious in their recklessness with a stunning 24 positive cases. We know that a superstar double whammy, Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore, has tested positive in New England. We know Patrick Mahomes, merely the face of the league and the biggest driver of the American broadcast economy, shared a post-game bro hug with Gilmore hours before Gilmore's positive test. Quote, Mahomes, like I have my entire career ahead of me and I'm not even thinking about it. A mental lapse, he said, unquote. And since then, Patrick Mahomes has been sleeping in a bedroom apart from his pregnant girlfriend. Yeah, this is going on in the NFL 2020. We know the teams have positive tests every day, whether they're fully transparent about the results or not. We know that competitive integrity and fairness is a sham, that the quality of play will suffer, and that defenses will be non-existent as attrition and rescheduling exacts a toll. We know this is not a season to take seriously unless one is an owner, a player, or a broadcast executive with a deep financial interest. Here was the Packers coach Matt LaFleur speaking of COVID life in Wisconsin these days.
Well, I think it's especially important when you consider the area that we live in. And unfortunately, COVID is running rampant in our community. And our guys got to continue to make smart decisions because you can see how it can, you know, impact a football team. You got to look no further than Tennessee. I think I don't know what the count is up to now, but certainly they had a game postponed. Who knows what's going to happen this weekend with them? And all it takes is one guy to infect everybody else. So whether we're inside the facility or we're out in the community, we got to be smart. We got to be very mindful of everything that we're doing. Responsible, we've got to wear a mask, and we would certainly appreciate it if everybody in this community would follow suit, because I think everybody enjoys watching the Green Bay Packers, and for that to continue, we need people to do their part. We said it a long time ago, it's going to take all of us, and I mean.
And here was Bills coach Sean McDermott.
You know, we're fighting an uphill battle. I think we know that there's a challenge because of how easily this thing spreads. Having acknowledged that, John, it's the league, I think, took the right steps to increase the protocols, and it's necessary. because it's only going to get more difficult, as people are saying. And
the bigger question is, what don't we know? How many other people in this country have been infected and will continue to be infected because the NFL insists on bulldozing through a season of games during a pandemic? Has anybody checked in on Gilmore's wife, his two children? At what point does the urge to recoup billions and feed the TV networks with the programming inventory they need to stay afloat verge on the criminal? As Roger Goodell and the owners force feed a season down America's collective throat like cyanide. I, for one, was listening closely when the Patriots' Matthew Slater described his post-game mindset after his team was forced to fly to Kansas City during an incubation period and play the Chiefs. Quote, a lot of us just wanted to make sure we were healthy and not passing anything along to our families, Slater said. That was the primary concern, end quote. So, we're just going to keep doing this dance through October, November, December, January, and Super Bowl week in party-minded and pirate-happy Tampa, in a state that largely thinks the virus is a hoax? Yes, we are, regrettably. Rather than copy these successful NBA and NHL blueprints of bubbles, in this case, enveloping each of the 32 franchises, including mandatory hotel stays until seasons conclude, the NFL office is locked in a stubborn ego and hubris trip. Goodell and his lieutenants are sticking to a flawed plan that could backfire at any time in any facility. They are convinced the protocols are sound and are pointing fingers at players and coaches for the violations, refusing to acknowledge that the league relaxed as well and reveled in its own God complex when September revealed few COVID-19 positive tests. In the Titans' case, it's undeniable that players flouted a league edict by working out together at a Nashville school, and the organization surely was complicit as well, which should have warranted a forfeiture of at least one game for a 3-0 team dreaming of a Super Bowl. That is, if we believed Goodell's memo to teams last week when he said, quote, protocol violations that result in virus spread, requiring adjustments to the schedule or otherwise impacting other teams, will result in additional financial and competitive discipline, including the adjustment or loss of draft choices or even the forfeit of a game, end quote, Roger Goodell. Okay, well, then where's the forfeiture? The loss of draft choices. Rather than hammer the Titans where it hurt in the standings, the league, for now, is siding with money and TV ratings by simply moving this much-awaited Titans-Bills game first to Tuesday, then to Thursday. We were going to have Tuesday night football, then to Thursday. Now it's days after that. I'm dizzy because this is just moving these pieces around like, as I said, rat traps here and there and everywhere, a checkers game, a chess game. Put it here, put it here. Move this one here, blah, blah, blah. I'm exhausted already. It's only October the 12th. In the multi-billion-dollar world of the NFL, even an owner in Nashville, though, simply blinks at a $500,000 fine, I should say. By continuing to punish teams financially and not competitively, the NFL maintains the leverage to keep teams out of those bubbles. Oh, think of the excessive costs, and places the entire onus on players, coaches, and personnel to avoid COVID-19. The demand, of course, is far from fail-safe, as already shown throughout the league. This comprehensive testing system is imperfect, even on a daily basis, such as when Gilmore tested negative before the game in Kansas City, when he obviously was infected already, leaving dozens of human beings vulnerable to a spread on the field and inside the Patriots' two planes. The NFL was lucky to avoid additional positive tests in those facilities. That made Goodell even more bullish, now able to play Big Brother with a new league-wide video system that effectively spies on each facility to see if protocols are followed. Can you imagine this Park Avenue conversation? Goodell, I've got Tennessee duty again tonight. I hear through sources that players were at a honky-tonk last night. Lieutenant A, Oh, I don't trust Adam Gase with his shoelaces, much less protocol adherence. I'm going to spy on the Jets. And then Lieutenant B. No, Gruden is a madman who refuses to wear his mask, so I've got the Raiders. Yeah, is that how they're going to do Big Brother? They can play gotcha all they want. Why would anybody of sound or sane mind think the Tennessee outbreak is an aberration in a league of 2,200-plus players and some 1,500 coaches and support staff? Here was Bills quarterback and early MVP candidate Josh Allen.
Yeah, and again, it takes one guy to go to the grocery store, and it's simple as that sometimes, and you don't ever suspect anybody to have it in the facility, but you've got to hope that guys are wearing their masks, the contact tracers are working. If guys are feeling down and they're not feeling right, and like we had, a player wasn't feeling great today, and he told everybody, and he was good to go. But just like holding each other accountable to that standard where if you are feeling something, tell somebody.
But Goodell is flying blind, and considering he's capable of bad decisions when he can see, the season ahead is a scary proposition. The virtual bubbles would have a much better chance of working than the status quo. Ask Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred, who wouldn't be pulling off what has become a compelling postseason without forcing teams into bubble structures this month in California and Texas. The NFLPA would need extra incentives, but the Titans outbreak might have changed players' minds about restrictive confinement. In truth, the NFL and college football's Power Five conferences aren't receiving enough public backlash about exposing players to danger. When much of America isn't treating the coronavirus with appropriate concern, starting with the continuing follies of the COVID-in-chief, who still might have been contagious while speaking at a White House public event this weekend, football's powers that be can afford to be cavalier and keep playing the games so the billions roll in. Then they trot out their versions of Tony Fauci, in the NFL's case, Dr. Alan Sills, who says, quote, it's critically important that we do not grow complacent. Yeah? He says it's all of us together versus the virus. Okay, well, unless you're the Titans, who have adopted this bizarre us versus the media stance when they should be thankful that those infected in their facility are recovering. This was quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who also doesn't trust the testing system.
You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't affect me, you know, if someone has an outlandish opinion. But, I'm of the opinion that, you know, you should really, you know, speak for yourself and find out some more details before you jump down someone's throat.
Gentry?
Yeah, Ryan, just how unsettling was this for you personally when you had situations where guys are testing negative and all of a sudden they're positive, like you could have it and you wouldn't know it? I mean, does it affect how you interact with your family? I mean, just day to day, how difficult was this?
That was a roller coaster for sure. Definitely the fact that we had guys with no symptoms testing positive, and we had guys with full-blown symptoms getting consecutive negative tests on multiple days was really eye-opening, and just the fact of, you know, we really don't know, so we have to treat everyone, you know, as if they have the virus. Really probably lost some faith in the testing system just through everything that we've been through over the past week and a half. But we said that from the beginning that the testing is not going to prevent the virus from being spread. It's the way we handle ourselves with all the protocols and handle ourselves outside the building as well. So,
though pandemic sports viewership is significantly gutted, even the almighty NFL was down 10% heading into week 5, enough people are watching sports to more than keep the lights on at the leagues and the networks. If Trump and Joe Biden are the main entertainment on the phalanx of news channels, sports continues to be an effective sideshow. And the games have delivered, whether it's close finish or the return of Washington's Alex Smith from his grotesque broken leg, 17 surgeries. But even that was a glorious scene tarnished when Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott suffered his own gruesome ankle injury. This is why the NFL and college football ramble on. figuring enough people are interested. Look, Nick Saban thinks Lane Kiffin knew his defensive signals. Look, Mike Leach wants to rid his roster of malcontents to keep pushing that dangerous envelope. As I've said at least 99 times, if not 90,000, football is not played in a bubble. The NBA season was. The bubble allowed James to win his fourth championship. For Kobe, for a Lakers franchise not long ago in disarray, for social justice, and of course for himself. This one will not make him the greatest basketball player ever, but it will give him peace going on age 36 that he overcame attrition and emotional fatigue when his younger rivals did not. What are Kawhi Leonard and Giannis Antetokounmpo thinking when they weren't good enough to even reach the finals, to even have a shot at the old man? When twice-fired Frank Vogel, who was supposed to be knifed in the back by assistant Jason Kidd, earned James respect and won a title that corrected the slumping reputations of owner Jeannie Buss and basketball boss Rob Pelinka, what are we to think of all of this? It ended the way I guess it was supposed to. LeBron on top. Jimmy Butler was LeBron's equal for five games, but he and the Heat ran out of juice in the Game 6 blowout clincher. Somewhere in the White House, believing he is immune from the virus he contracted last week, President Trump was not happy about this. Just the other night, he ripped James on Rush Limbaugh's show, saying this.
The NBA has become so political that nobody cares about it anymore.
That's not why people watch it.
I don't know if anybody that's... I don't even know who's playing in the finals. I don't know anybody that's watching the NBA. LeBron has been a spokesman. I don't know him. I never met him. All I know is when he endorsed Hillary, I said, that's the greatest endorsement I've ever seen, because when he endorsed Hillary 4 years ago, she came up to his knee. I said, that is not the best-looking president I've ever seen. Okay? I thought that was the greatest. It was standing.
You mean standing? She came up to his knee.
They were standing. No, she was up to about his knee. I mean, literally, I've never seen anything. And I said, that's not good. But LeBron is a spokesman for the for the Democratic Party. It's a very nasty spokesman.
In one sense, this might be the first of many Trump defeats, right? Here was LeBron again reflecting.
It's been unbelievable. It's been unbelievable. We didn't know. It was an unknown. But I think Adam, I think everybody from the NBA to NBPA, putting this thing together, you know, and us using our voices, us using being together. You know, you hear Golden State always use the phrase strength in numbers. And that's exactly what it was while we were here as the NBA, as the NBPA, all our players, everybody had a voice on what's going on in America. So we know we all want to see better days. And when we leave here, we got to continue to push that. Continue to push social injustice, continue to push for voter suppression, continue to push for police brutality, continue to push for everything that's the opposite of love. And I think if we could continue to do that, all of us, America would be a much better place, which we all love this country.
And here was Jeannie Buss finally getting one for her late father after a decade of, don't forget this, intense family drama.
You've done Los Angeles proud with your hard work, your professionalism, and your dedication. And you have written your own inspiring chapter in the great Laker history. And to Laker Nation, we have been through a heartbreaking tragedy with the loss of our beloved Kobe Bryant and Gianna. Let this trophy serve as a reminder of when we come together, believe in each other, incredible things can happen. Laker Nation, when it's safe, I look forward to celebrating with you. Until then, I will bring back the trophy to Los Angeles where it belongs.
And here was Commissioner Adam Silver, whose Silver Dome at Walt Disney World was a health and science miracle with zero positive tests among players. The NBA may be in trouble in the future, but for now, Adam Silver goes down in medical history as a savant.
This season restart was always about something bigger than basketball. It was about resilience and ingenuity, but it was also about racial equality and social justice. Working together, teams and players, we found a way to play through a pandemic, keep everyone safe, and put a spotlight on these critically important issues.
There will be no parades in LA for now. Unlike Florida, the city is too fixated on COVID to issue special event permits. Barriers were installed outside Staples Center in case irresponsible Laker fans wanted to celebrate in packs. But the Dodgers are inviting fans to Chavez Ravine for a drive-in watch party in the parking lot. Price per car for each game of the National League Championship Series in Arlington, Texas, $75, with fans allowed to bring food and non-alcoholic beverages. If the Dodgers win and the Lakers win, and suddenly, magically, there's a vaccine, what the hell kind of a party are we going to have around here? See, I just can't go there right now. The Dodgers are requiring masks if fans want to use the restrooms, which is a hell of a lot more prudent than what they're doing in Arlington, where MLB is actually defeating the purpose of the bubble by permitting 11,500 fans per game inside Globe Life Field. Are Rob Manfred and Dan Mullen sharing notes? The dream World Series in LA, and for America, really, would be Dodgers-Astros. That way, after 3 years of organizational and fan base anger about Houston scamming to win the 2017 series, the Dodgers would have a legitimate revenge shot, not having to settle for Joe Kelly throwing at Houston batters and making those pouty faces. Imagine Dodger Blue beating the unrepentant liars just days before the election. But baseball operations president Andrew Friedman may have been premature in saying this on Sirius XM radio about the Astros.
I think them playing the victim's complex card is a little interesting to me. Like, I get that, you know, it's been a difficult year for them, but to play the victim card, I think, has been, a curious strategy.
See, loaded as the lineup is and determined as Clayton Kershaw is to reverse his postseason GOAT status to GOAT, G-O-A-T, the Dodgers still have Kenley Jansen issues, and not having that established closer could be trouble against the Braves and their mashers, accompanied now by a pitching staff that has thrown four postseason shutouts. Inside quiet ballparks such as San Diego, which is the site of the AL Championship Series, at least the Astros can say they don't need to steal signs and bang trash cans to win. We'd hear it, right? A formidable lineup makes contact, doesn't strike out, puts pressure on pitchers with Carlos Correa in MVP form. And they aren't gloating as much, refusing to rip critics like they were before. Here is Correa.
We're motivated because we want to win. We want to be able to bring another championship to the city of Houston. We know what it feels like, so we want to be able to have that feeling once again. 2017 was such a special year celebrating with the fans in Houston. So, you know, the thing that motivates us is get to feel that again and be able to win another championship. So,
ugh, can't deal with Houston winning again. No longer armed with Garrett Cole and the injured Justin Verlander, the Astros will be underdogs against the Rays, who manufacture victories with skilled starting pitching, a fireballing bullpen, and typical Tampa creations such as Cardinals castoff Randy Arozarena. That's what they should call their ballpark, the Arozarena. He's a Cuban defector who spent his own COVID quarantine doing 300 daily push-ups and adding 15 pounds of muscle. The result has been a Mr. October transformation, his power bat spooking the Yankees. But the conquering hero here is one Mike Brasso, an undrafted find who symbolizes the Rays way. Remember September when the snarling Aroldis Chapman almost beheaded him and with that 101-mile-per-hour heater, which led to counter-threats by manager Kevin Cash? On the 10th pitch of an all-time at-bat, Brasso sent a 100-mile-per-hour pitch over the left field fence, giving the small market Rays their latest and greatest triumph over the pinstriped colossus with the limitless spreadsheet, most recently augmented by Cole's $324 million deal. As the celebration continued in fan-vacant Petco Park, first baseman Ji-Mon Choi was kicking over and stomping on, yep, a recycling bin. Hello, Houston. You have a problem. Might the Rays join the NHL's Lightning in a Tampa Bay title perfecta, pandemic style? Brady and the Buccaneers would love to join the fun, but last we saw our ageless wonder in Chicago. He was raising four fingers after his final incompletion, trying to trick the officials into giving him another try. Is that how desperate he has become with a team that is battling penalties and injuries? Brady says he doesn't miss the cold weather of New England, calling himself, quote, a Floridian for as long as I can envision now, end quote. But at this point, with Brady throwing clipboards and helmets and Cam Newton recovering from COVID, the great Brady-Bill Belichick 2020 comparison debate is on hold. It could be our grandest sports memory of 2020 is Rafael Nadal in Paris. Not because he won his 13th French Open title and 20th Grand Slam event, which places him in a tie with Roger Federer for most all time, but because he provided precious dignity. He beat Novak Djokovic, the ugly one who threw a summer COVID party and infected himself and others, then was tossed from the U.S. Open when he whacked a ball in anger and hit a linesperson in the throat. But it was Nadal's commentary on the world, the mood right now, that will stick. Said the Spaniard, quote, the feeling is more sad than usual. Maybe that's what it needs to feel like. It needs to be sad. Many people in the world are suffering, end quote. Perspective. Why must we cross an ocean to find it? Now it's time for The Buzz, our regular deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program, and Chris, LeBron James has won a title for Kobe Bryant, the formerly dysfunctional Lakers, social injustice, Trump haters everywhere, and of course, for himself. As somebody who grew up in Southern California with the Lakers and all the legends, tell me where this one fits in. The floor is yours.
Jay, as we know, I've been vocal on LeBron over the years, and I have to say, this even got me to be really excited over the last week or so. And the ups and downs, you know, the couple games that the Heat did play really tough and won. Friday night was supposed to be the perfect night in the Black Mamba jerseys. Game five, they would have won all the series in five games. And then the Heat, out of nowhere, throw a wrench in that party. And then last night, for the Lakers to just blow away Miami. This is special. And again, I'm a Jordan guy. You're a Jordan guy. We waxed poetic about Jordan constantly on this podcast. And I still believe Michael Jordan is the greatest. But LeBron is certainly putting his name up there. This one was special. Three different teams, three different finals wins, three different times with three different teams being a finals MVP. And even though he's the darling of the NBA and Adam Silver and social justice, the reality, and we all know this, is if he didn't want to play, there would be no bubble. They would have canceled the season because of the pandemic. He wanted to come back. He wanted to win it, and he won it. And he had to go through some really rough teams. And sure, he didn't have to face the Clippers, which is what everybody was waiting for in the Western Conference Finals, but that wasn't his fault. That was Doc Rivers and Kawhi and Paul George and whomever else. So I have to hand it to LeBron. And the talk is already out there about back-to-backs and going for 18 championships versus the Celtics at 17 for the Lakers. That's all wonderful. And as somebody who's in the Lakers business and in the LA sports business, that would be great. It'd be a great story. This is a great story. This is tremendous. So I hand it to LeBron. I hand it to the Lakers fans. It's been a rough 10 years. And Jeannie Buss getting to go out there last night and make that speech was wonderful. It was a wonderful moment in sports, and it was a wonderful moment in 2020, which has been a horrendous year.
And Chris, now we have NFL players saying the league doesn't care about their health and safety, just money. They're moving games around like rat traps. At what point does the NFL say, hey, the hell with it, we'll try next year? Because, Chris, this already has been a very long season, and it's only a month old.
Here's what I don't understand. NFL players and people now calling out the NFL for doing something wrong. We all know what this was. This was about money. The players signed up for this. Now blaming the NFL for not having a bubble, well, the players didn't think that would be an issue. The NFL not having protocols, there's protocols everywhere. We sat at the end of the summer watching inside the NFL and everyone getting swabbed and masked and everything and wiped down. Here's the reality. There's protocols in society now. We wear masks. We have hand sanitizer everywhere. You wash your hands. You be careful. And you avoid the virus. It's a virus. It's airborne. It's a respiratory virus. Guess what? If you don't follow common sense protocols, you're going to get sick. You know, Jay, I remember giving you a hard time in the spring about games shouldn't come back because there's going to be all this contact and NBA players are going to be all over each other. Sweat. Spit. Guess what? It's not getting spread on the field. We aren't seeing mass outbreaks from one team to another because of a game. We're seeing it because people are getting infected by doing dumb things and then going to the facility and infecting their teammates. It's hypocritical now to come after the NFL for doing what they do, which is making money. Of course they're doing this for money. We all know that. All of this is for money. We could all say that there's joy in bringing America a savior and something to watch. But if we all were in reality and money wasn't an object and jobs weren't an object, you would have canceled all sports. Of course. You would have closed every Target and Walmart. You know how I love to make this analogy. And we haven't. NFL players being big and strong and thinking they are immune or above a virus, which is spread as easily as the flu. It's not like the flu, but it's spread like the flu, which means it can literally be spread by simply talking to somebody or shaking their hand. We know that. Now, NFL players are immune to probably dying. We know now that they're not going to die most likely because they are big and strong and superior athletes, but that doesn't mean they're not going to get the virus. That's the issue. That's what they should be talking about, not trying to blame ownership and the NFL and Roger Goodell and now the thirst for money. Everyone's out there for money.
And Chris, how would you feel as a Dodger fan about having another shot at those cheating Astros in the World Series? Would that mean more to LA than this Lakers title, in that LeBron is a rent an icon, move to Hollywood, future mogul? People around here don't like Hollywood moguls, whereas the Dodgers are a traditional staple of Los Angeles culture.
Nobody enjoys Kershaw throwing a home run ball as much as I do, especially in the playoffs. And back-to-back, what he did against the Padres. But now I am getting sucked in, Jay, to the thought of both teams winning, which haven't been done since 1988, which I barely remember the Lakers winning. And, of course, I remember the Dodgers winning because I was much more a Dodgers guy than a Lakers guy when I was 5 years old in 1988. So the thought of this happening would be amazing for the city. It would be amazing for sports. I'm getting caught up in it, Jay. I want it to happen. I want the Dodgers to play the Astros. I want them to win the World Series. I want L.A. to be title town and bring some smiles to people that are having a rough go at it, especially in this city, and this is a political statement, where we have a dope like Eric Garcetti running the city, who's at the presidential debates as the co-chair of one of the parties and one of the candidates, instead of paying attention to a city that is literally rotting away, in a state that is rotting away, with a governor who refuses to open things up and let people go back to work. That's my political statement. So with that being said, yes, go Dodgers!
Okay, thanks, Chris. Enjoy the, what would that be, a virtual parade?
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Freedom of speech doesn't mean a damn in America if the privilege is abused and lives are threatened. Government regulation might be necessary when you hear the story of Danny Green, the Lakers guard who missed a potential title-clinching shot and was subjected to death threats, as was his fiancée. Green has been dealing with abuse all season, part of a Lakers experience poisoned by insane outside pressure. He claimed he wasn't shaken by any of it somehow.
I just block, ignore. I've got so many messages I can't even hit the delete all button, because it just, I guess my Instagram just won't recycle it. I don't know if it's so many, but I just don't read them. I know she probably shouldn't get as many, and she didn't have as many followers, so she could probably, it's probably close, she can see more of it. I said, I don't pay attention. I had to ask her yesterday. I said, you getting death threats? She's like, yeah, you are too. I was like, I don't know, because I don't really pay attention or care. nor am I such shaking or worried about it. I'm just not one of those type of people.
Danny Green is a stronger person than most of us. I'm happy his missed three-pointer will be forgotten amid his second straight NBA title. He has won twice now. When a creep, or actually going back to San Antonio more than that, when a creep tweets death threats, he should be shipped to the slammer and left to rot, and Danny Green and his fiance should go and watch all of that. That's our show. Thanks to Mac Miller, no longer with us, for his musical contribution in the show open. For our producer and editor, Chris, who is celebrating somewhere, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
Right here and now.